tonight, we give our thoughts on Bit Trip, Beat, and Mad World for the Wii. Plus, Sony's Online is free for gamers, but they have to make their money somewhere, right? All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwolf Show, week of March 22nd, 2009. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this, Matt.
And it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, that game.
Bobby Blackwolf back at Dragon Con 2005.
I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch.
DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwolf.
Happy birthday to Konami. La la la. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. If you're listening to us live here on All Games Radio, I want to welcome you. Head on over to our chat room, chat.allgames.com. You will be able to make intelligent comments, and I'll read them throughout the night. I almost hit the wrong button there to stop everything from happening. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwolf Show, all one word. And our toll-free number in North America is 1-866-880-0156. If you're listening to us on the podcast feed, blackwolf@allgames.com is my email address. I will say I have gotten quite behind on the podcast stuff. The last two episodes are not up. I'm going to be actually releasing them separately on the feed tonight, along with this show. So if this is the, like, if you only get, like, the recent show on the podcast feed, you should probably go back and listen to the last two if you really care. One thing I do want to state that was on the last week's show that we haven't put up yet is that we do actually have a giveaway for Killzone 2 for the PlayStation 3. I was initially thinking I was going to get the podcast out earlier, so we would have picked a winner tonight. We will not be picking a winner tonight. It will be next Sunday night, the 29th of March. So here's basically the deal. Is we've got a sealed copy of Killzone 2 for the PlayStation 3. More information on how we got it and who it's from and all that stuff last week. But essentially, if you want to win this, Killzone 2, you need to send an email to blackwolf@allgames.com. And in this email, you need to include your PlayStation Network ID, because we want to make sure you have a PS3. And give us the answer to a trivia question. The trivia question is, in the infamous E3, or not the infamous, this is later, in the E3 2007 demo of Killzone 2, one of the on-screen character models had as many polygons as what? And this is according to the developers of the game. So according to the developers of Killzone 2, one of the on-screen character models in the E3 2007 demo had as many polygons as what? So email the answer to that, along with your PlayStation Network ID, to blackwolf@allgames.com. We want to make sure this goes to a loving home. For reasons why, you need to go back one episode, maybe go download it, and listen to the whole spiel on it, because it's kind of cool how we got it and who gave it to us and everything like that. So it was not a free copy. Somebody actually bought this. It wasn't me, and so thank you, Zaku Pilot, for this. So we want to make sure it goes to a loving home and not to somebody who's just going to go flip it on eBay or something like that. So let's talk about some games. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, I want to talk about some games that maybe I talked about a little bit Friday here. Friday night is Bit Trip Beat. This is a game for WiiWare. This is an independent game made for WiiWare. I forget who actually made it. I didn't write it down. I'm sorry. I like independent games. I like the independent game developers, but they're also open to criticism. And I hate criticizing independent games, especially ones with innovative new ideas like Bit Trip Beat. But just because it's innovative doesn't mean we can't criticize it. See Mirror's Edge for this. I don't subscribe to the fact that, oh, it's something new, therefore it's an A++ and we must love it. Bit Trip Beat, it is a... not really a Pong rhythm action game, but it's a cross between Pong and Rez, which had music set to what was going on, and everything happens to music. Now, what this basically is, it's Pong in a horizontal, not vertical, so it's Pong, but it's on one side. It's actually, if you've played, we talked about it earlier, the Xbox Live Arcade game Revenge of the Ball, it's the balls and everything come at the same direction. So you've got the paddle on the left, when the balls come in from the right. Basically, that's about where the similarities between this and Revenge of the Ball stop. Bit Trip Beat, there are three songs in it. The first one's called Transition, and I know that because that's the only song I've been able to play. And it's basically, there are set patterns. Everything is a set pattern, just like in Guitar Hero or Rock Band. The notes don't change. It's not anything that's going to throw anything at you. So it's all pattern recognition. And basically, your job is to move this paddle to hit all of the balls. And not all the balls come in at the same way. Some of them will come in diagonally. Some of them will kind of curve around. Some of them will actually kind of go around the screen and go down and then towards you and then up and then back away from you. And basically, you have to learn the pattern. And then you hit them all. So you basically have to kind of know when to put the paddle where and deflect them all back. As you hit more, it's kind of funny. This is one of those games, it punishes you for doing well, and it punishes you for doing badly. So let me explain. There are several game design decisions that I completely disagree with the game. I love the initial concept, and the trailers had me hooked. The first game decision that I didn't like was the way you actually control the paddle. You have to hold the Wii remote horizontally, like you're going to play an NES game. And to go up, you actually have to tilt it forward. And then to go down, you have to tilt it back. So it's not like, you would be able to, move it side to side like it was a steering wheel or something. It doesn't work like that, and you can't use like a nunchuck or anything like that. So you actually have to do it this way. And like Rez and some other games, it uses the vibration function in the remote to give you the beat, the downbeat. So, it's a straight downbeat of whatever, however beats, many beats per minute the song is. Now, unfortunately, because of the sensitivity of the accelerometers in the Wii Remote, your paddle jumps around due to this. So, you'll be sitting there sitting still, and the paddle will be jumping around to the beat because it's the vibrating is actually affecting the accelerometers, and it's very sensitive. So that'll throw you off a little bit because you think you're in the right place, but the paddle's just moving ever so slightly. That's one of the design decisions I don't like. There are things. It's an 8-bit looking game. It looks like, it's all pixels and pixels and pixels. Which that alone is not bad. That's one of the things that endeared me to it in the trailer. Unfortunately, they really mimicked the fact that you couldn't do that many colors on an 8-bit system. So there are actually backgrounds that happen in the background. Backgrounds that happen in the background. Hey, imagine that. There are things that go on in the background. Now, these things, like there's a comet. You're in space. You're flying through space. There's comets. There's other huge balls that go through. These things are the same colors as the balls that you are trying to hit. So in a game where you're trying to, especially when you're in the learning phase of trying to learn the pattern so you can actually get through the stage, you can't see them coming because there's a yellow comet on the right side of the screen. And the yellow ball is coming in from the right side of the screen, and you don't see it, but it's going extremely fast, so you really should have seen it before it got on the screen so you could have moved down to it in time. And then that throws you off for the next series until you can get back into things. So basically, they have the backgrounds as the same color as the foreground. So you can't see what's coming. And I guess maybe they're doing that for the difficulty of you just have to know it's coming, and you have to die a couple times. As you actually do better, as you hit more in a row, you actually go up to a different play field, which the play field will actually shift, also disconcerting you because it decides to shift in a vertical motion. So you're following your paddle and you don't realize you're about to shift, and then you shift and your eyes move with it and it's not supposed to, and then you get thrown off. But what that does is that now whenever any of the balls hit the top and the bottom walls, they make a little flash and like a little explosion type of thing. So there's more stuff going on the screen, and those are the same color as the balls that are coming towards you. And then the music changes ever so slightly. So it punishes you for doing well by making it even more hard, more difficult to see the balls. And basically, the way you get points is the more that you hit in a row, the more your multiplier goes. And once you get to that mega stage, then you get multipliers, and that makes your score go higher until you miss one, and then you lose all your multipliers and stuff. Now, there's a meter at the top of the game that basically tells you how well you're doing. Every time you hit a ball, that meter goes up, and as it goes towards the end, the right side, that's when you your stage is going to flip to the next one. There's one at the bottom that tracks how many times you've missed things. And this one, basically, it resets when you go up a stage. But then, you know, the only way it resets if you're already at the high stage is when you go down a stage. So, and that has the same vertical flipping. Now, what really upsets me is when you're about to die, it basically, it flips down to literally bare bones Pong 1973. White on black, no background, no music, no sound coming out of your TV. You have to have the Wii remote sound on because that's the only sound you get. And it's when the when the ball hits your paddle. And you lose the colors of the balls that tell you how they are going to react. It's all black and white. It's just one color, monochrome, whatever. So right when you need the help the most, it makes it extremely difficult. It takes away your beat. It takes away the music, so you can't really figure out when things are coming by listening to the music. And it takes away the colors that tell you what type of ball this is, so you know if it's going to stop and then come in, or if it's going to go up and down, or how it reacts, if it's one of the bouncer ones that basically you have to, it follows you up the screen. It makes the game impossible. And you can get out of it. You can get out of it. Basically, if you hit enough in a row, like if you, I think it's like 10 or 15, then you go back up to the stage that you started on that has all the music and everything. So, the game design decision is making it more difficult when you're doing well, which I can kind of understand, but also making it extremely difficult when you're about to die. I'm not a big fan of those decisions. So, I haven't beaten the first level. Apparently, there is a boss at the end of each level that looks like Breakout. You're trying to break the... But I don't know actually how that works, if that's timed to the music, if it's still pattern recognition, or if it's actually a game of Breakout. Somebody actually in chat, ActF, wanted to call in a little bit later on. He's past where I am, so maybe he will shed some light on the later part of the game. But, you know, it was a great idea. I loved the idea. I went and spent my $6 on it on Monday to play it, and immediately called it extremely frustrating. So, you know, kudos to trying something new. Kudos to Nintendo for letting it on the WiiWare. But I did not like this game. I can see why some people would like this game. I loved Rez, and, you know, people know I'm big into, like, rhythm action and music-based games. So I give it a C. I mean, it's got good ideas, but some of the game design decisions overshadowed those good ideas, and it made it next to impossible for me to enjoy. I'm in chat.allgames.com to see what people are saying about BitTrip Beat. Game Guru says, if it had a demo, Black Wolf would only have the demo. Probably, yes, because I would not have been able to beat the demo, and I don't buy games that if I can't beat your demo. ActF in our chat room says, yes, the boss battles are basically Breakout-style levels. He will probably call in and talk a little bit about that. ActF says, it's Gaijin Games. They're the guys. Gaijin Games are the name of the people that made BitTrip Beat. Thank you very much. Tiger Claw says, I gotta say, the music in that BitTrip Beat would sound cool if you laid a techno beat over as the game progresses, the music starts building up. That's kind of exactly what it does. Pretty much. Unless you're talking about something more. So that's my review of BitTrip Beat, or my impressions of it. I don't think I'm done with it. I may go back in every once in a while and try to get farther. It really is pattern recognition. Every time I did play, I got a little bit farther in the stage because I kind of knew what was coming up. Just making it that difficult when you're doing well and when you're doing bad, I can't support that. If it made it more difficult as you did better, I would understand that because that would actually be challenging and stuff. But when you're already kind of frustrated with not being able to hit things and not being in the right place at the right time, and then it makes it even more difficult for you, then I can't support that decision. So let's go on to another game. This game also came out on the Wii. We talked a little bit about it last week on the show that nobody really has heard yet, except for our live listeners here on Sunday night. Mad World for the Wii. This is an M-rated game for the Wii. And yes, it is for the Wii. We actually did feature this on Friday Night Gaming. It was a big hit, actually. Essentially, it is... Apparently, it has a serious storyline, but it is the most over-the-top, dark humor-filled, violence-filled game I have played since No More Heroes, really. The game is black and white, is white on black, so it looks like a comic book basically, and the main character looks like Hellboy, but I do know that it's not Ron Perlman that's doing it. But basically, you're this dude with a chainsaw, and the premise, at least as far as I can gather so far, is that there's this TV show. So it's kind of like Smash TV. It's basically the Running Man. It's like that, and. There's this TV show, and basically it's, you know, you get points for how you kill people. This is the murder simulator that everybody wants to hate on. They just don't know it yet. You get points for how you kill people, and it's so over the top and so gratuitous. It has Greg Proops and John DiMaggio. John DiMaggio is best known as Bender in Futurama or Marcus Fenix in Gears of War. And then Greg Proops, he was on Whose Line Is It Anyway, but he was also one of the announcers in the episode one of Star Wars, Phantom Menace, in the pod race scene. So they're the announcers, and they're doing all of the immature, over-the-top announcing of, you know, you killing people, and they're doing it in the full TV style stuff. So it's hilarious if you're into that stuff. You know, I mean, I was laughing, and I don't know what that says about me, but I bet a lot of you would laugh, too. The only color on the screen is the red of the blood when you kill people. And you can kill them in many different ways. In half, vertically, in half, horizontally, putting things in them and walking them over to spikes. And you know, there's flames and everything. There's also little mini games. And it's actually a mini game collection. That's one of the things that they put on the back of the box. So it is a mini game collection as well of these bloodbath challenges. Or you have X amount of minutes or whatever to... throw as many guys into an airplane turbine as possible, you know, things like that. So there are. It's very creative, I guess, in that sense of, you know, how many ways can you turn a white on black comic book character into red? But it's actually pretty fun, and a lot of people I showed that saw it, both at the computer arena and in our chat room here on Friday Night Gaming, said, you know, they're going to dust off their Wii for this game. It's just so over the top. It knows it's over the top. Apparently there is a serious storyline underneath it, but I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen that storyline yet. So and there is two players. Once you unlock those mini games, you can actually play those mini games two player in a split screen environment. So you can actually get some offline multiplayer, which I really like. There's no online on it, but it's pretty much a single player experience through the storyline. So you wouldn't really need online for this one. So I think it's you know, one of the first Wii games I've bought in a while, and it doesn't make me a pedophile for owning this game. So I give it an A just to upset Nymph, because we talked about them having a problem with the game. You get points. You know, you can basically, you know, one of the things they show early on is you can put a tire around a guy, and then you can stake him stab him in the head with the signpost, and then roll take him over to a big spiked wall and throw him into the spiked wall several times. All by using the Wiimote. And you get more points than if you just kill them normally, if you do a routine kill. So, it does reward you for more brutal stuff. But I don't think anybody, any kid, is going to have a chainsaw for an arm and is going to be pulling out signposts and sticking them in people's heads. I don't really think they're going to do that. But, hey... So this is a game, if you have a Wii, you bought it for, you know, say Super Smash Brothers or something, and you don't really have it for anything else, you don't want to play the kiddie games, Mad World is definitely one to check out. I give it an A. Tiger Claw also wants to point out that during the Bloodbath minigames, there is a stereotypical black man in a pip costume. And so it is quite, it can be offensive, so if you're very sensitive to stereotypes and stuff like that, you will get offended by this game. Just so you know, it doesn't really hold back. So just keep that in mind. Dark Tetsuya says, but Bobby, won't this game teach all our kids to go be trained killers? Like I said, I really don't think that they're going to be able to find a signpost they can rip out, and they probably won't have a chainsaw on their arm. No. You basically, to hit somebody, you hit the A button. You're not actually mimicking it. There are gestures that you have to do with the Wii Remote and the Nunchuck, but they are... not mimicking the action. It's just to make the action go quicker. You know, when you're slamming somebody from side to side, you're just shaking the Wii Remote side to side. You're not actually, like, making the motion of lifting it over your head. And it's not looking for 180 degrees of motion like the character on screen is doing, is just looking for a little waggle, wiggle, whatever. So, two things I wanted to go talk about right before we went into our news story. One thing is Game Developers Conference is this week. I will not be attending this year. I was unable to get a get in as media, basically, because they don't want bloggers and podcasters in there as media, which I can kind of understand because there were some bloggers and podcasters, no one that I knew, but there were some that kind of were thinking that GDC was a mini E3. And we're looking for big news on games, and so they were taking up all the rooms in the panels held by, you know, like the designers of Final Fantasy 13 had a panel about, you know, game design, and half the room was taken up by bloggers and journalists thinking they were going to hear something about Final Fantasy 13, and about 15 minutes into the session, everybody walked out. So all the developers that couldn't get in because the room was full missed the first 15 minutes of the session because it was taken up by these bloggers and podcasters expecting game news, when all they got were these Japanese guys talking about, you know, their design processes and stuff. So what I want to say is, you know, I really like the GDC. I like what it stands for. I don't have too much of a problem with them telling me I'm not invited or I'm not wanted. They did try to get me in there. They were going to comp me in, and I just couldn't. I had already rebudgeted after the initial rejection, and I couldn't really work it in to go, but one thing just to note, it is the Game Developers Conference. The Game Developers Conference is for game developers to talk to each other about game development. Do not think that you're going to hear major game news. You know, you're not going to hear the next Megaton announcement. You're not going to hear Nintendo say that they're going to release, you know, Mother 3. They're not going to make that announcement at GDC. They're probably never going to make that particular announcement, but they're not going to make anything like that. If they were going to make that announcement, they wouldn't make it at GDC. GDC is basically where people show off their design techniques and tools and middleware to make game developers feel better, you know, and make their jobs easier. A lot of the stuff that they're going to talk about this week is going to be based on iPhone development, because the iPhone is really taken off at game development. I'm going to get to it a little bit right after this. But, you know, it's about that, and, you know, they're going to talk about making, you know, independent games like on the WiiWare. They're going to talk a lot about downloadable content and things like that. So that's kind of what it's about, and it's about, you know, showcasing the independent games. The Independent Games Festival is there. So don't think that you're going to get any kind of huge news. That's what a lot of people do, is that they'll, like, find a live blog of one of the keynotes, because I think Konami's giving a keynote, and I think Satoru Iwata's giving a keynote. People are going to refresh, and you're going to be disappointed. Because I was actually there. One of the best talks I ever saw was when Shigeru Miyamoto did a keynote at GDC, and he was talking about his thought processes on designing Miis. And he went all the way back to talk about how he designed Miis on the original Game Boy, you know, how it kind of morphed from there to what we got today. And he talked about, you know, how all his game designs are run by his wife. It has the wife test. Really interesting talk. And I was actually in our chat room, actually live blogging it, so I was part of the problem, I guess. But I was actually in there chatting exactly what he was saying, and everybody was really pissed off that there were no Nintendo announcements. Like, they didn't announce anything. They showed, like, a trailer for something, and it might have been Super Mario Galaxy was what they showed the trailer of. And that was it. And everybody thought, like, everything that Miyamoto was saying, they thought he was going to announce something. He's like, oh, you know, because they talked about Mario Paint or something, that he wanted to do something with Mario Paint, and everybody thought Mario Paint was coming to the Wii, because he was talking about it. No, he was just talking about his design. So that's kind of what you're going to get at GDC, and out of the GDC coverage, is that it's not going to be for you. GDC is not for the gamer, it's for the game developers. There might be some things there that would interest you, but it's not E3. E3 is going to be in June, and that's when you're going to hear things. Sully907 said, Home and Little Big Planet were first shown as GDC, and it makes sense because those products were innovative for consoles, but it was kind of strange when Epic turned around and showed Gears 2 at last year's GDC. And that's one of the things, is that, you know, I kind of was against, you know, like, Microsoft showing Gears 2, and I was kind of against Sony showing Little Big Planet there. And Home I could understand, because the context that Sony initially showed Home, because I was actually there at that keynote, The context that Sony showed home was, hey, developers, this is another way for you to advertise your game. You know, you'd make a, you know, back, this was 2006, so you'd make a MySpace game to, or MySpace page to advertise your game. You'll make a Home Space to advertise your game, and that was kind of where they were putting Home. They weren't saying that Home was going to be the Second Life metaverse, whatever, yada, yada. They were saying that Home is going to be a great way for you to showcase your product to our user base. That's what they positioned Home as. So it was perfectly logical for them to debut Home at Game Developers Conference. Little Big Planet, I could have... It was kind of cool to see that, you know, because they were talking about getting more people into game development. That's where they showed it. But Little Big Planet, I really didn't think... I think Little Big Planet could have waited until E3 to be released. But Home, it absolutely made sense for them to release it at GDC because their reasoning was to tell game developers, here's a way to advertise your game on our system. That's why they released Home, or announced Home at GDC. Gears 2 had no point, really, being at GDC. And I don't think Microsoft's even doing a keynote this year at GDC. What Up G says, when Miyamoto was there, he doesn't give many public talks, so they thought that maybe there would have been the bone thrown. And see, that's kind of why a lot of the game developers were there in the room, because he doesn't give that many public talks. And so they really wanted him to talk about game design. He only had an hour. He doesn't do that many public talks. And he's there with a room full of game developers. And he's there throwing bones to the game developers. It's the Game Developers Conference. Shadow Next Gen says the point of Gears 2 at GDC was to show off Epic's new tech. And they are going to be showing some new stuff in Unreal Engine 3 this week. So one other thing I really wanted to quickly touch on. I don't want to spend too much time on this because... I really don't know what I can touch on, but this week, Apple had a big press conference at their Cupertino headquarters showcasing the iPhone SDK 3.0. I don't know if I've said it on this show. I know I've said it on Friday Night Game. I am an iPhone developer. I am in the iPhone developer program. I am actually working on some game concepts. It's for my day job, believe it or not. So I actually have kind of played around a little bit in the 3.0 beta, but it's all NDA. I can't really tell you. I have the 3.0 SDK, like, or the OS right here, and I'm actually using some of the features on my one of my iPod Touches of the new features. And I'm not going to say exactly. I can talk about what they talked about in the press conference, which is what I'm going to kind of go over a little bit. But I will say, for those of you who use an iPod Touch or an iPhone and you listen to podcasts, there are things they didn't tell you, and you're going to really appreciate them. But anyway, I don't want to say exactly what, and that probably might have gotten me in trouble. But some of the stuff they were announcing in the iPhone SDK in the 3.0 was in regards to games. They really are positioning it to be a major player in the mobile game market because, you know, the games are a lot cheaper, you know, and I think Nintendo is a little bit scared. Now, you know, they are trying to push developers to create games on the DSiWare store, you know, and not just games, but apps. You know, non-games on the DSiWare. Because, I mean, Apple, you know, you go to the iTunes, the App Store here, and there's a lot of games there, free, 99 cent, $1.99, $2.99, things like that. So there's a legitimate competition here, and we all laughed. I laughed originally when Apple said, you know, we're going to be a big gaming platform, and you know what? They're doing it. Some of the stuff that they're doing in the new SDK, though, it's going to help game developers, but I'm not so sure if it's going to help consumers. They are going to have voice chat. I haven't been able to play with that because I don't actually have an iPhone, so I can't really do the voice chat. And they are going to be doing peer-to-peer networking over Bluetooth between two... Like it's kind of like ad hoc networking between two devices, where if as long as you're in range of each other, you can play. That's the way the DS does a lot of its multiplayer games. There are ways around it in the current SDK. There are some programs that as long as you're both connected to the same Wi-Fi network, you can actually play against each other, and there are also online protocols, you know, both low level and high level, to be able to do network programming. But this just kind of makes it easier. It uses Bonjour, which is their kind of networking protocol that they have over there on the Mac. One of the other things is that they've got they can now have you do DLC from within your app, and this was requested by a lot of people because a lot of people wanted to sell more content without without people having to go all the way out to the App Store. Now this actually puts it, and there's like a whole SDK within their iPhone stuff where they can actually now have DLC for their games. Now, the ramifications of this is that, you know, they actually showed a demo at this media event where a screen popped up and said, would you like to buy a rocket launcher for 99 cents? And I really hope nobody actually does that. I hope that was a joke. I didn't see the video, so I didn't see the context. I just saw the screenshot. But that would suck if you had to pay 99 cents each time you wanted a rocket launcher and a first-person shooter. But there are some games, like Tap Tap Revenge, we've talked about on this show before. They actually already have downloadable content. It's already it's all free, but you can download more songs. But I think they would really like the idea of being able to sell a song for 99 cents from within the App Store. Some people were already kind of trying to do this on their own servers and stuff. But this way, Apple gets their cut of it. Now, here's the thing, is that you can only find DLC in paid apps. So, like, a free game like Tap Tap Revenge actually probably wouldn't be able to take advantage of this API. But any game that you've paid 99 cents or $1.99 for, they could possibly add new content, you know, like more levels or something like that, for a smaller fee instead of actually releasing a second game on the App Store. So, there is a lot of neat stuff. They really have kind of done some really good stuff in the 3.0 SDK. I can't tell you much more. I've looked at it, played around with it some. When I do have something I want to share, yes, you guys will know about it, so don't worry about it. Steve Jobs says, Mr. Black will please see me in my office. Excellent. I would love to meet Steve Jobs. Channel Z does point out there is an external mic peripheral. And there are actually, some of the SDK actually does allow for other peripherals. So I'm going to be scared if Activision makes a Guitar Hero peripheral for the iPhone. That would just, I don't want to see that. Axis K says, a wild Steve Jobs pops up. Do you want to attack it for 99 cents? Shadow Next Gen says, the iPhone itself is not the problem for me. It was the cost of the monthly bill. So get an iPod Touch. The iPod Touch, literally, other than, you know, I think the only thing that the iPod Touch can't do is make phone calls. Everything else is you can actually do, and it doesn't have a 3G network, so you can't actually use the internet anywhere. You have to use it a Wi-Fi hotspot. You can get an external mic for it. And apparently, in the Q&A, they did mention that there is Bluetooth in the new generation of iPod Touches, the second generation iPod Touch. It's just not activated yet. But it is there. So Bluetooth does exist in the new iPod Touches, not in the first one. They say they may be able to activate it, or they may activate it in the future. But there's a Bluetooth headset in there. So, wow, I spent a lot of time. We're not going to do a music break. How about that? We're not going to do a music break this week. I do have one news story that I kind of wanted to read through, and then we're going to take phone calls. Orange Lounge Radio not occurring tonight. Sky is out of town. He's getting in tonight, and he doesn't want to do a three-hour show, obviously, after he gets in. We will probably be going a tad bit longer than usual, but I just want to let you know that. But we're not going to do a music break because I rambled a lot. So the one news story kind of that I wanted to bring up was about Sony. An MTV Multiplayer blog reported on this week. Now, publishing sources have told them that Sony's previously unreported new PlayStation Network bandwidth fee is forcing them to think twice about content they offer to PS3 gamers for download. So basically, PlayStation Network, it's free for you. It's free for the gamer. You get all, you know, and they say that you get all the same type of stuff that you get from Xbox Live, and you don't have to pay a dime. It's all free for you. Well, money's got to come from somewhere, right? And it's coming from the publishers. And on October 1st, 2008, Sony started a new licensing deal or thing about getting paid per gigabyte. So, and this includes any kind of downloadable content. Demo, I think even trailers, you know, DLC, anything like that. They now are getting charged. The publishers are getting charged by Sony based on how much their bandwidth is. So Sony implemented a 16 cents per gigabyte fee to publishers for paid and free downloadable content, according to many publishing sources. So they said last fall, detailed the policy. There was a letter sent out to publishers. A 16-cent charge to every gigabyte of content downloaded from the PSN online store. For free content, like demos, those charges apply during the first initial 60 days of the content's release. For paid content, like map packs, the charges rack up in perpetuity or until that content is removed from the online store. The fee has been unpopular with game companies, according to at least three publishing and development sources who spoke to MTV Multiplayer about the policy on the condition of anonymity. I can't say that word, so I'm not going to say it again. Quote, it definitely makes us think about how we view the distribution of content released to our games when it is free for us to do it on the web, on Xbox Live, or any other way, including broadcast, than on Sony's platform. It's a new thing we have to budget. It's not cool. It sucks, unquote. So publishers already pay to actually create the demo. It can sometimes run six figures, and Sony's fees add a new expense. So the math here is, if a demo is sized at exactly 1 gigabyte and is downloaded 1 million times, that would add an extra $160,000 that Sony is now charging, and that Microsoft is not charging this. So that is why you may find some free content not available on the PSN rather than Xbox Live. So, see, I'm kind of jumping around on this to try to see what I can get. Now, what this does say that Resident Evil 5, this article actually lists some demo sizes and stuff. Resident Evil 5 was 942 megs, and across the Xbox 360 and PS3 was downloaded more than 4 million times. This is a free demo, and, you know, 4 million times, if that was all on the PS3, that's over $500,000. That's $500,000 that they have to pay Sony for that free demo. So Sony did say, spokesman Patrick Siebold said in the email response to MTV, quote, they appreciate the opportunity to jump in here, but we respect the confidentiality of our business agreements with our publishing partners. Of course, we work closely with them to bring their amazing content to our growing audience, and we are focused on ensuring we and our publishing partners have a viable platform for digital distribution. We foresee no change in the high quality or quantity of demos and games available on PSN, unquote. They obviously have not talked to the game publishers directly. So the only thing that really hasn't come out recently that did come out on the Xbox 360 that didn't come out on the PS3 is the recent Call of Duty World at War demo from Activision. Activision did not respond to this this article to say if that was on purpose or just they didn't feel like it. This is, you know, obviously, you know, for gamers this is fine, really, because I mean you're not paying for it, and you know, it could be said that Microsoft makes only gold subscribers allowed to download something. Some demos, like some demos are available a week early only to gold subscribers, and that may cover some of these 16 cent per gigabyte bandwidth fees. Something that, you know, maybe isn't as, you know, hotly needed, like, you know, a demo for Disney's Bolt or something, they could probably, you know, not have to worry about hitting 1 million downloads and stuff like that, and especially if it's a smaller demo. This may force people, some game companies, to cut back on the demo size to make it smaller, which, you know, which would probably be good for some consumers who don't have high hard drive space. So you may see less in the demo on the PS3, but then that would also cost them more money to make separate versions of the demo for the 360 and the PS3. So it could actually cross over to the Xbox 360 as well, because a lot of people, they, you know, just do the thing once and just build it for the different platforms if they've done their coding right, basically. This is the price that they pay for having free online. Sully907 says, maybe fewer demos, but not DLC. Paid DLC, I think, would still be going on, because, I mean, if it's, you know, a 100K DLC that they're selling for $5, they're not going to get anywhere close to having to pay 16 cents. It's only for, like, the big stuff, like add-ons and demos, and I think even full games, you know. But, you know, when a company's, you know, releasing something, you know, I don't know how big Burnout Paradise is, the new Burnout Paradise, it might, you know, it's a couple gigs, obviously, but it's also $30. So, you know, yeah, so maybe half a dollar of that goes to Sony for bandwidth fees. But it's more going to be for free content that is released. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and open up our phone lines and our Skype line. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156, if you want to call in and talk about anything we've been calling in tonight. You can give your voice on it. So we do have a call here on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and grab this. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is a Pimp Method from Lowndes, Georgia.
Hey, Pimp Method. So, what's on your mind this week?
Yes. Two games that have recently came out, Killzone 2 and Resident Evil 5. Mm-hmm. I have been noticing throughout of, several blogs and, like, communities that, like, both of these games, the people did not like the controls, especially on the official websites. And then two of the companies, I think one of them was Capcom, for these games, they made a statement basically saying that we want to maintain such and such about the game, mainly to our loyal fans of the game, including the Killzone. I don't remember which company that made Killzone. So my question is, should game developers should game developers listen to their own customers, or they just should just stick to their own guns and just make the games?
So here's the
way
thing
they want to be control.
Yeah, now see, here's the thing. There's this misguided misconception that is put into a lot of people's heads here in America, is that the quote-unquote, the customer is always right. And this is not true. The customer is not always right. Gamers, and I mean, I've seen this and I've gotten enraged at this, but it's also very brilliant that people have some people have said this. Gamers don't really know what they want. So really, you know, yes, you have to listen. They listen to the customers. They listen to the game customers, but only to a point. They try to see if something really is a problem or if it's just internet bitching, which it could be just internet bitching. And that's kind of what they've both done, is they've said, you know, this is the game that we wanted to make. This conveys what we wanted to make. What you want is a different game, and they don't want to make that game. So, you know, they didn't give in. They looked into the issue, and they kind of said, I mean, both of them, Guerrilla, who makes Killzone 2, and Capcom, you know, made a conscious decision saying, this is how we wanted to make this game. And yeah, you may not like it, but, you know, hey, that's why we're two different people.
Okay, my thing is, unfortunately, I only played the demo of, like, Resident Evil 5, and I could be, like, one of the many who got spoiled by Gears of War 2. I said this for, like, several community blogs and phones, mainly to Capcom. It's 2009, Capcom. 2009, not 1990, such from, like, Resident Evil 2.
Right. No, and I understand that, but, you know, a lot of people are trying to make Resident Evil 5 into a Gears of War type game, and to me, Resident Evil and Gears of War are two different types of games, and so they shouldn't control the same and stuff. And there are a lot of people that really don't like Resident Evil 5, and then you know, as my co-host on Friday Night Gaming, Glenn Martin, said, you know, he was bashing it because of the controls and stuff, and then he actually played it, and he's loving it. So apparently the controls do work for what Capcom's trying to do, as long as you look at it like this is Resident Evil 5 and not like, man, I wish I was playing Gears of War 2. So
I really don't. I just think, okay. My point is, why should I stand still, point and aim my gun while there is a dude with a sack over his head, revving his chainsaw and run towards me? It don't make any sense.
Suspense.
But, oh well.
It's the suspense.
Screw suspense.
But that's what Resident Evil is. It's suspense. It's a suspense game.
No. Screw that. I am moving and dodging and bucking shots. That's my game style. We are moving side to side and charging and bucking shots. But of course, I can understand because you're not a first-person player.
Right.
all right, well, that'll be all.
Okay, thank you very much, man.
You're welcome.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. We'll be taking a few more calls. Orange Lounge Radio not occurring tonight. Sky is out of town, so we will probably be going just a tad bit long, but not too long, because I don't want to hear my own voice for that long. And I do know that other people wanted to call in, so this is their time to try to get in. Here we go. So we do have another call here on the line, so going to take this. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, this Act Deft.
Act Deft. So you wanted to tell me why I'm wrong about Bit Trip Beat, right?
Not exactly wrong, but some of your points don't... well, you exaggerated a little bit.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you
did. I was 100% true and very unbiased. So what's up? So you talk now. I had the floor. Now it's your turn.
Okay. So you're basically right about the controls in the game. I do agree that they should have at least made an option to use the control pad. Or at least the D-pad with the nunchuck. That's one point I agree. And the other thing you talk about was the blocks itself that blend with the background. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Some do blend with the background and make you confuse you and make you miss the blocks, but there aren't that many to make you miss. Since the game is old patterns, they're really hard to miss. That's my opinion on those two points.
I think, and to be fair, that's probably more of a frustrating thing when you're still trying to learn the stage and learn the patterns. Once you kind of know do the pattern recognition, which it's like this in any shooter, you know, space shooter or anything like that, you know, then it won't matter as much. But it's frustrating when you're trying to learn everything and learn the patterns. To not be able to see the ball until it's right, you know, until it's down, you see that it's down at the bottom of the screen, you're already at the top.
Yeah, possibly that. I may be an old school fan of like games like Gradius, R-Type, and all that stuff. So maybe it was a little bit bit easier for me to understand the patterns. Though it is difficult. I do understand that. Maybe a new player. For this genre of games, or this kind of games, they may have a difficult time.
So, you know, I didn't make it all the way to the end of Transition, which is the first stage. So what happens is it at the end of the stage? It's a boss battle, I guess, and is it still kind of synced with the music, or is it actually a random game element?
It's more of a random game. Mm-hmm. The first boss, it's basically a Pong game. You're bouncing the block back and forth.
Okay.
That's the first boss.
Okay.
The second boss is a breakout style boss.
He's in the trailer.
Yeah. That's it, the second boss in the second stage. That it's called Descent. Mm-hmm. I haven't gotten to the third stage boss, so I cannot tell you what happens there.
And so in the breakout game, do you just have to get all the bricks? Get rid of all the bricks? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
And then the first game, is there like a score thing, or you're just trying to get the ball past the other paddle?
No, you have to pass the ball through the other paddle and basically take out the boss.
Okay, so you have to like hit the boss like three times or something like that?
Yeah, kind of. It's a combination between Pong and Breakout,
okay,
basically.
It's one I'll have to get to. You probably weren't watching Friday. I didn't know how close I was to the end of it or not. Is this something like, do you enjoy this game? You're more into these pattern recognition, you know, you're into the, you know, Gradius and those. You know, is this something that you enjoy?
Yes. I would definitely recommend it to someone that likes, like, for example, Res. Maybe Audiosurf, because it's a little bit similar, not exactly the same, but in style, it's the same way. You have to hit the proper elements or the proper blocks to continue. Though for someone that maybe, I don't know, that doesn't like shooters, or maybe it won't be that... How would you say it? That appealing to other players.
Now, do you agree with me about it making it more difficult as you're about to die?
Kinda, though. I basically I use that moment when you're gonna die to regain my health, basically. So for me, it's not difficult either, but it isn't easier either. So.
So what grade would you give it? I gave it a C. What would you give Bit Trip Beat?
possibly a B, a B minus, something like that.
Right. So yeah, it's up for $6. You've heard both me and ActDef talk about it. You can make up your own mind. And there's video on Friday Night Gaming, along with actually I put picture in picture of me actually using the Wii remote, so you kind of see how you're supposed to play it and stuff. So yeah, thank you very much for your opinion. Do you have anything else you want to bring up?
Another thing I want to say about the game, it's that the first level, if you find it hard, the second and third level are going to be, well, way harder.
Hate you, Gaijin Games.
That's the only thing I have to say about the game,
right,
other than that.
All right, well, thank you very much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156, if you want to call in and talk about anything about this, Bit Trip Beat, Mad World, anything else, gaming, you know, PlayStation Network charging people that aren't you 16 cents for you to download. So I guess I wonder, here's the thing I want to wonder is, you know, if you really hate a developer or something, you know, should you just download their demo like multiple times and make them pay more? Like, is that like, you know, they have like a gigabyte demo on the PlayStation Network and you download it and delete it and download it and delete it and download it and delete it and, you know, suddenly you've done that five times, six times, and you've costed them a buck, you know? Or are people going to do, you know, download spamming, you know, getting like DDoS attacks? So we have another caller here on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and take this. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hi, this is Spazinator.
Hey, Spazinator, so what's on your mind?
Yeah, I had a short little question for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Samurai Showdown 2 was released for the Xbox Live Arcade a few months ago, and they just released a collection for the PlayStation 2 maybe about a month ago or so?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, are they going to... You know, hang on, I have to turn down my radio. sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, I was wondering, are they going to do like any more Samurai Showdown games for like the PlayStation Network or Xbox Live?
I don't know. I don't keep up with the Samurai Showdown series of games, so I would not be the person to ask that.
Yeah, I was just curious because not so much with most of the games in the series, but at least during my college days, I was a really big fan of the Samurai Showdown 4, and I used to love playing that all the time at my college, and I was just kind of hoping beyond hope that eventually, sooner or later, one of the systems would release it on their download service.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm sorry, I don't have anything to tell you.
All right, well, thank you very much.
No problem.
All right, have a good one.
Thank you. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. If you want to call in, we're going to talk just a little bit longer. I've actually been getting other calls in, so that's why I'm going to keep the phones open for a while. I do apologize about like volume stuff because I'm trying to change the volume of the callers in real time, and sometimes I don't do too good of a job making sure that they're not too loud or too soft. I'm playing with my little volume slider the entire call. And they fluctuate. So I try. So we do have another call here on the line, so go ahead and grab this. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, Blackwolf, it's Pen15.
Pen15! It's been a while. What's up, man?
I feel kind of awkward. I feel like I need to have an accent, but I don't.
What's up, man?
I wanted to know, first of all, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you? We've missed you.
Yeah, it totally sucks that I can't listen live, but I have been listening through podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, you know, I've been listening to a ton of podcasts because I'm at work pretty much the majority of the time. And I've heard all this stuff about how games, when are we going to have our... What's that one movie that everyone compares games to? They say, when are we going to have this kind of game that is the end-all, be-all of games that we always look toward? Citizen Kane, that's
it. Citizen Kane, okay.
Yeah. And every time this conversation came up, I always kept saying to myself, why do we have to judge it by sort of a standard that it doesn't really apply to video games? Why can't the standard be, you know, gameplay? which is the one differentiating factor of all other games. Because everyone assumes that a game must be something like story or music or have elements that aren't really about it being a game to have it be justified as something amazing. And specifically, I was thinking, well, what would my game be? And I think Soul Calibur is sort of, it's an odd choice, but I think it's
not
an amazing, yeah, not for me. But I mean, just in the sense of somebody made a game that is absolutely accessible to anyone, and it's fun for anyone to play. However, it still maintains that like super hardcore depth that's there if you want it, but is not absolutely necessary. And that's very rare that you find a game that can be played by anyone. Like, anybody can pick up the controller and enjoy the game. Sort of like Tetris has the same thing too, where Tetris is very simple, but then for those hardcore players, it's like, yeah, you know, I'm on level 60 of Tetris. Those are the guys that really dig deep into it, yet, you know, my mom can play Tetris.
I think the reason that everybody wants to find our Citizen Kane or whatever they call it, it's mainly because it's the industry's so young. That's all they have to really compare it to, pretty much. Or, you know, they don't have kind of a benchmark in gaming, so they have to kind of make a benchmark in movies. However, I will say that when people are saying we're looking for our Citizen Kane, they're not looking for a game that's, you know, shows ceilings for the first time or anything like that. You know, movies have Citizen Kane, which was kind of a groundbreaking thing in movie making, and they're looking for something that is really groundbreaking in games that just makes everybody turn their head and think back to, wow, you know, games sucked until this, or, you know, this really changed the game industry. And honestly, I don't think we're going to find anything like that. I think it's too late for that. Maybe if there was a game that really turned people's heads, that everybody can say is a cornerstone, is this is when gaming became what it is today, then we'd have that. But I think it's too late. I think the industry is a little bit too old to have something like that.
But I think that they're trying to find that through narrative instead of what separates us from other media, which is gameplay. Like, to me, you know, everyone has played Mario and can enjoy Mario on some level, but Super Mario Bros. 3, the design, I mean, literally, he took a flat screen with a guy running on it and did as many things as humanly possible with that screen. Like, there's nothing in that game that I can even think of that I could have gone, well, it should have had this. Like, it literally has everything. And I always look back at that game as the perfect game. Anybody can pick it up, and it's just flawlessly made, in my opinion.
It should have had guns.
Well, I mean, that could be argued. In a sense, it does. You know, he throws fireballs. That's a sort of gun.
But it doesn't go straight. It doesn't go straight. It goes down and stuff. I want to shoot straight at Bowser.
Well, see, then we get into that whole argument of when my best friend almost punched me in the face because I said, hey, why can't Mega Man shoot diagonally? He almost killed me for that because I was so used to Contra where I'm like, right. Oh, you can shoot diagonal. And I was like, this game is stupid. I never played Mega Man, so I played like the collector's edition of Mega Man X with like 9 games in it. And he almost, you know, choked me to death because I dare say something about Mega Man.
Well, good for him. I mean, I'm sorry to hear that, man.
And one last thing I want to say was, I wish that every game came with a mode of sort of how the developer wants me to experience the game. Mm-hmm. Because as much as I do love the options that they give me, I wish that there was an option where it goes, well, how do you ultimately want me to experience the game? And then I can change it from there on. Because nowadays, you know, I put on a game on normal, and it's sort of like, well, it's too easy, so I have to restart and play on hard. And then there are other games where you put it on normal, and it's way too hard, and I have to put it on easy. And I just wish that there was a button of, this is what I want you to experience, exactly how I want it done. Every reviewer should play this way. It's going to be the same for everyone. And that's how the game should be judged. However, the gamer has an option, has choices of, well, you know, I want it super easy, or every time I die, I don't want to be, you know, thrown back to the beginning of the level. I want save points. You know, things like that. Because I think certain games, like, for example, Resident Evil. Resident Evil, the control scheme is bothersome to some people. So if some people want to completely destroy the whole tension and everything, well then, give them the option to play in the Gears of War style. It only hurts them, and when you think about it, doesn't that mean more sales for you?
Well, see, I can tell you somebody that actually had the same idea as you did. I mean, maybe not exactly the same idea, but Nintendo patented exactly what kind of, or not exactly what you're talking about, but Nintendo has a patent now for kind of a walkthrough button, which they're probably going to implement into the next Zelda, where, you know, if you get stuck somewhere or you need to know how to get to the next area, you hold down this button and it controls Link for you in the way that the developers intended you to get to the next area. And it's kind of made as a way for if the game, if there's a part of the game that is too hard for you, like you just can't make that jump and you get frustrated and stuff, you can hold down this button and Link will make that jump for you and it will keep going until you let go of the button. Nintendo has patented this, like it was like late last year or something like that, but they filed the patent for this and we're thinking it's going to be in the next Zelda.
And see, that is an amazing innovation because, you know, Chatterbox co-host Ara Sharinian, he is a game designer. And one day I said, hey, what do you think about the idea of gamers experiencing games the way they want versus the way you want them to? And he totally was against that idea. And I thought, that's kind of backwards. You should want the gamer to be able to decide how he wants to play your game, not you force him down a road that he might not enjoy. Because at the end, he bought your game, and he's enjoying it the way you want. So what's the big deal? And it still amazes me that Nintendo... I mean, was this talked about today?
No. This is a couple months ago that this happened. I don't think I covered it on the show. But no, this patent was going around. It got filed or something, and so it was in... You know, somebody found it in, you know, the U.S. Patent Office records or whatever. But so we're thinking it's going to be in the next Zelda. But Nintendo has not announced or officially announced any of this. But it is a patent filed by Nintendo.
And I, you know, I talk a lot of crap about Japanese game designers. But I almost don't consider Nintendo in that same group whenever I'm talking about Japanese game designers. Because they're so stuck in the past. And just Nintendo's innovation... is amazing, because that is brilliant, that the game just kind of does it for you if you need it. Because games have kind of started to add that, you know, with the ability to show you the path of where you're supposed to go, mm-hmm. or something like, you know, well, back to Soul Calibur, when you want to know how to do a move, it'll physically show you. It'll show you the character doing the move. And except Nintendo went ahead, well, why don't we just do it for them? They're obviously having a hard time, so let's just do it for them. And those that want it can use it, and those that don't want it don't have to use it.
Right. And Dark Tatia in chat says, what's to stop somebody from, you know, taping down the button? Absolutely nothing. If you want to experience it like a movie and just hold down that button for 12 hours, you go do it.
And that's exactly what I was arguing with Ara. I told him, well, imagine if somebody only likes the story of your game and they just want to see the story. And he's like, well, that's terrible. And I'm like, no, he bought it. He bought it. He's still playing it. Isn't that the whole point for him to buy your product and to enjoy it? Like, I think that's perfectly fine. If somebody really loves, you know, the tale of Link trying to save Zelda and that's all they care about, well, then sure, let them hold down that button and get the experience that they want out of it instead of just, you know, oh, this game is hard and, you know, that's it. You have to deal with it. Either beat it or give up, which, you know, most people give up. Like, oh, I think it's recently BioShock, 50% of the people who bought BioShock beat it. And that's actually extremely high. Most people do not beat games when they buy them. And I think that something like what Nintendo patented, well, it's kind of a shame that now Nintendo has a patent on it, because if somebody else tries to do the same thing, they'll sue them.
Yeah, so or they have to pay a license fee to Nintendo or something like that. So, but yeah, they filed that patent, and a lot of people in chat are actually saying that, you know, we already have our Citizen Kane, and it's Super Mario Brothers, the first one, because it revitalized the North American console market, and a lot of people really look back at that as, you know, the game that kind of showed us what we could do. So a lot of people are saying we've already had our Citizen Kane, and it was Super Mario Brothers.
I personally think it's Super Mario Brothers 3, because that's when you truly saw the design being implemented into games. Like, I think Super Mario was just kind of a cute game. It did have design elements, but I think Super Mario Brothers 3 was where you go, oh, level design matters, you know, puzzles matter. And, like, it was just so well put together. And I think the original Mario was kind of a straight shot. Mm-hmm. There was only one way to beat it. I actually beat Super Mario Bros. 3 by getting the two whistles at the beginning and fast-forwarding to the last level, mm-hmm. which Nintendo did not care that I did that. They put that there so that I could do that.
Well, you could also theoretically do that in the first Super Mario Bros. There were warp zones.
Yeah, but you still had to play a significant amount of the game to get to the last one. Mm-hmm. My point is, I can from the first stage, there are, what, 8 worlds, I believe, in Super Mario Bros. 3, and I can skip 7 of them. mm-hmm. And how many games just let you do that? It's like, all right, let me skip to that. And it just, and it's okay. They don't care. They got your money. Mm-hmm. What do they care what you do with the game? And right. to me, that's sort of, you know, while we're giving gamers the ability to build levels, we're still not giving gamers the ability to experience the game the way they want to.
So thanks for your call, man. It's a really interesting topic. Thank you.
All right. Great show, Bobby, and hopefully I'll stop working so damn much so I can join you live.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
So that is it. That's all the calls I'm going to take tonight. Orange Lounge Radio not coming up after this. So if you're listening, waiting for Sky and company to be on, they are not coming on after us. Sky is still getting in town. I don't think he's in town yet. And Darksarker and Loki didn't email me or anything to tell me that they wanted to do something with the show. So as far as I know, nobody from Orange Lounge Radio is going to be on the feed tonight. And I apologize to OLR fans. For that. So I did want to mention, because we have Haymaker in chat in our chat room, he's running a contest for 360junkies.com. This is a new community site. I don't know if it's new, but it's a community site devoted to the Xbox 360, and they're doing a really interesting contest, and I'm really honored to be a part of this, where they have a t-shirt, I guess it's for 360 Junkies, a t-shirt, but they're sending it around the country to a whole bunch of different independent podcasters, starting with like Edie Sellers from Game Hounds, but they've got Guije from the Gamers Pub over at Platform Nation. I'm doing this off the top of my head. I don't have his email in front of me. But also Electric Sisterhood here from All Games, and a bunch of other podcast celebrities or something from all the different networks around there, not just All Games, not just Platform Nation, you know, everybody. There's a bunch of GamerCast guys on there. There's even some Microsoft guys on it. He's sending this around. I'm actually honored to be one of the people that will be signing this shirt. So they are doing a contest over at 360junkies.com, 360junkies.com, and over there in their forums, I think they've got a thread that, you know, is the entrance where you can enter to win this competition. It was originally for another site. It's moving to this other site, but I will be signing this shirt if it gets here at a time that where before, you know, we kind of go off the air on Friday Night Gaming. We're going to be signing it on the show, so you'll be able to see the shirt on Friday Night Gaming on TV, but it's starting on the West Coast, and he's actually got it going like as it's you know, across the country, so it's not crisscrossing. So I'm actually one of the last people to get the shirt, so it'll be a while before I get to it. But yeah, 360junkies.com to enter and win a t-shirt signed by a whole bunch of podcasters. So that would be great. If you want to sign in that. And, you know, thank you, Haymaker. And I think it was Pimp Method. He called in earlier. I think he was the one who initially suggested me when the contest was being talked about originally in December, and I got an email in December. And I'm glad to see that it's finally coming around. So, yeah. So that's it. That is all that I'm going to inflict on you guys this week. Remember, no OLR this week. They will be back next week. Bigger, badder, better than ever. So we will be back, though, next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on All Games Radio, so you can come join us live and you know, interact with the show directly, or Friday nights. FNGLive.net is our video show, Friday Night Gaming, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. This past week, it was really something I was really proud of. We actually looked at the FC3 Plus and the Retro Duo. Both of these consoles were both of these consoles are retro consoles. They're kind of emulators. They're not full hardware, but they play NES, SNES, and the FC3 plays Genesis games as well, all in one unit. We put it through its paces. We put a whole bunch of games in them just to see if they would work. I put in a Super Game Boy with a Japanese Beatmania game into it. We put Super Mario RPG in them. We put Star Fox in them. We tried to put Castlevania 3. That didn't work too well. But we basically we put them all on and just went through for like an hour just putting different games in there. We put Killer Instinct in it, and I am proud to say that if you didn't watch it, you get to watch me kick my co-host's ass twice in Killer Instinct. I kicked his ass, and then I kicked his ass in Eternal Champions on the Genesis a little bit later on. That's all over at fnglive.net. We will have that podcast up tonight, as well as all the previous shows, the Bobby Blackwolf show. So, you know, hopefully I'll be get back on track with that. Remember, our Killzone 2 contest, blackwolf@allgames.com. The beginning of this show or the beginning of last week's show both have the information for that. And Mike Tiger Claw wants me to talk about, we put in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, and we put in the code, and we're not going to talk about how quickly that ended. So feel free to leave us a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper for use in our show on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show. And you can email your thoughts and opinions to me at blackwolf@allgames.com. You can join our official forums at allgames.com to take part in our community. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. DC Nate, Derek H, GK128, Hendrix, The Rob D, Channel Z, Eswat, Funnydale, Kitsune, Mako, Maximilian, Octocamo, Stone Raider, THK, Tigerclaw, Toshin, Wylan, ActDef, Aki Ripper, AlphaBox, Alpha Canagram, Alt, Amazetsuma, AshFox, Axis K, Bacon Bits, Binary 667, Boxy, Burr, Cedabria, Crispy, D5T, Dark Tetsuya, Blue Guy, Decipher, DJ Dark Knight, Game Guru, Goldanthro, Havoc 978, Haymaker from 360 Junkies. Thanks for coming in. Hecked Away, Hero 78, Hey Jude, Hitstun, Hostile One, J Irv, JP the Prodigy, Justin Sane, Kazin, Mavali, MXT, New Shiny CD, Nutman, Pen 15, Prowler, Punchy, Recon Elite, Shadow Next Gen, Sounds, SSJ 100, Matt, Sully 907, TCG Vince from Two Crazy Gamers. Thanks for coming by. TDB 30, Tedekin, The Raven, TM 95, Visid, VXJCNXV, What Up G, Wilcon, Xlink, and DR4EV. So, that's it for me. I will see you guys next week and on Friday. We have no clue what we're doing Friday night, but we're doing something. We'll figure it out. Bye. Bitrip beat sucks. So says me.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.